I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1989. The album, Monty Python Sings, the artist, Monty Python. My guest this week, Jennifer Candy. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
So you picked one of my favorite albums. I am on a real streak here. People are picking my favorites a lot, so I appreciate that. But I would like to know where you heard this album first and how and why.
Oh my gosh. This album, I think, came from, it had to have been part of my dad's collection. Mm-hmm. So when it came out, I was 9. Mm-hmm. And I can't exactly remember the exact age, but it was must have been around high school, maybe a little bit earlier than that. But I remember just listening to it and had it on vinyl, and then eventually DVD, CD.
Oh, sure.
God, so old. Can't even remember what the CD form is now. For when I was driving around in my car. I think it was actually a cassette first. My mom got my dad hooked onto Monty Python, and therefore that kind of like bled over into my love for Monty Python. So I always knew about Flying Circus and all of the movies at the time. And then I came upon the album, and I was just like, this is hysterical. And it pushed the boundaries enough where I felt like I was kind of, you know, a slight rebel in my own dorky way.
Of course.
Listening to stuff like that, but I loved it when I first heard it.
It's so good. I mean, even if you don't, I think I honestly, when I first listened to it, I was probably, I don't know, it was probably in my teens, and I already loved Python enough, but there's a lot of stuff in here from stuff I had not seen yet. I hadn't seen some of the movies, hadn't seen a ton of the show.
Right.
So how much do you think you were exposed to before this of Python? Having any, or was it just this? Was this the first Python thing you probably heard?
No, well, song wise, I want to say possibly this. And then from this, I went and hunted out where it came from.
Okay, there we go.
But I had seen, because I was not so young, but just it wasn't something that I would sit down and watch. But I definitely knew the Holy Grail, and I knew Meaning of Life and Life of Brian. But it was, there were some songs from the shows, like, and I had watched some of it, but not enough where I was like, wait, I remember that. Obviously, the Lumberjack song, I
knew.
Of
course.
So there's like the classic ones that stuck out, but then the more obscure ones, you're kind of like, oh wait, where did that come from? And all that.
What is I'd forgotten how long this record is. Just looking at it, I'd forgotten how many damn songs there
are. I know, right? I was doing remembering and refreshing that, and I was like, oh my God, this song and that song.
And I've got most of them memorized. I'm sure even the order. Like if I hear one, I'm like, well, the next song has to be coming, even if it's in another compilation. I usually think in the order of this album.
Well, because then they had Monty Python Sings again. Then there was another album before that. Which I discovered that much later than this one. I just liked also the cover album, the artwork of it.
Oh, it's so good. It's a delight. I'm an idiot for not knowing who did the art. I should probably look that up. Somebody's going to give me some crap for it. I'll look it up in a moment. But so your parents were cool with the language? They didn't care?
Oh, no, I don't think they knew that I was watching it this young.
Okay. That's hilarious. That is fantastic.
If my mom knew that I was listening to half the songs on there, she would have stopped me. So I don't know how I got around that, because my parents were around a lot. So I don't know. I don't know how I got away with it, but I managed to get away with it.
That's fantastic. Do you know how around when your mom introduced your dad to Python? Because I'm curious.
When they were dating. So it had to have been in, so my parents got married in 79 and they had been dating almost 10 years prior to that.
Wow.
So okay.
That's the right time. Okay, that makes sense. Because I'm assuming they were both in Canada at the time.
Yes.
So I don't know. Good God, have I asked any of my Canadian guests? Because I don't know if I've asked anybody who's lived in Canada their whole life when they got Python, because America got it at a weird time just because of PBS, but I don't know Canada's exposure.
I think we've had, well, at least the 60s or 70s.
Right. One assumes they'd have it almost immediately. Well, just because
most of the Canadian content on television was a lot of British broadcast anyway. Mm. So a lot of our soaps and cartoon shows were British. And
yeah.
So I think we just maybe we got it a little bit earlier, but I'm not too sure. I just always knew about it.
This is something I should really look up. I'm obsessed with Canadian content regulations as well. It's one of my favorite things to talk about for some reason.
Awesome.
Because it's not a thing we have here, you know, because everything's America all the time. Anyway, good God. You know, we could get over ourselves a little bit. Boy, oh boy, I don't want to ask your favorite song yet, but I do want to say what, because I'm now looking through, I'm just realizing, oh yeah, there are songs I definitely would never sing out loud.
And that's probably was one of my songs that I had completely memorized, but would never dare sing this song in public.
Of course. Even if it, you know, there's a lot on here that is, boy, oh boy, it's as timely as hell. Just satirical for the point of being satirical. And it's like, well, maybe we don't, you don't sing that.
There's some songs on there that I don't think ever need to see the light of day again or be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I think I even knew that some of those were slightly more offensive and racist to an extent.
Uh-huh.
And so you kind of are like, oh, those are ones that you learn about it early and you're like, oh, wait, this is not.
Yeah.
Not funny.
It's weird because so just for those who don't know, in terms of time context, 2 days ago or yesterday, John Cleese flipped out about people censoring an episode of Fawlty Towers. And I understand why it was done. But he gets into these, he talks about these censorship things. And then he unfortunately takes this long leap where he all of a sudden is on the side of leaving up Confederate statues. It's like, John, you could have calmed down 2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
And so we're just weirdly, we scheduled this just at a weird time. It's so funny.
I know the timing of everything, and I kind of was like, ooh, okay. Well, mm-hmm. We have to, you know, it was a part of my upbringing, and it was a part of history to an extent. And so it's how you move forward and how you acknowledge that, you know. But oh gosh, talk about Fawlty Towers. I grew up loving that show.
Of course. And again, while John Cleese had a good point in the first half of his tweet, which is like, we were making fun of racists. It's like, okay, but you could also understand why, for at least for a bit, we take it down. Maybe people don't want to hear that word on TV. So what do? Should we just mostly concentrate on the penis and sperm songs?
I know.
Because, I mean, those are always funny, right? I mean,
those are always great. Right? Every sperm is sacred, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Is it okay if I ask about the religious situation in your household? Were you raised religious at all?
Do you know what? We were brought up Catholic.
And okay.
That was our... And so I just... And I like to call myself a cafeteria Catholic. I don't know if that's the proper term. I pick and choose the part of the religion that I actually like. And
fair.
Don't believe... I just pick and choose the part that I believe, you know, I treat everyone well. There's a lot of fault to it. Like a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, some of the stuff in Meaning of Life was hysterical because you're like, this is absolutely absurd. And I love the fact that they, you know, they make fun of reality and they heighten it too. And that's what comedy to an extent back is and was back then.
For sure.
But it's definitely some of the stuff I don't know if I feel comfortable watching now again. But it definitely, everyone has the right to, you know, to express themselves in that way. But those songs are just beautifully written. They're just...
That's the big thing, yeah.
And I'll just say, there's nothing wrong with that penis song. It's hysterical.
No, it's fantastic.
It's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And... that was the song that I hadn't completely memorized when I was in high school, because I think everyone did. It's stupid.
Who doesn't want to say world's biggest prick? Like, who doesn't want to also the end?
And then there is a lesson at the end. Don't whip it out in public.
Yes, exactly right. You're right. It is a moral song, if nothing else.
Yeah. So it's true, you know, to be okay with yourself, but just there is a time and a place for everything.
You know, I might even be like, I'm a comedy writer and performer and stuff. And so like sometimes when we talk about comedy, I have a tendency, anybody will tell you, to get way too up my own ass about some of this stuff, especially about satire. And the more I think about it, I think I really care more for the more absurd or more obviously stupid penis song, spam right. song. Come yeah. on. Like the satire, I've always enjoyed satire, but that is, that's the heady version of what, like, come on. When I'm 12, 13, 14, what's the stuff that's going to hit me the hardest? And that's a song about sperm. Or, yeah. you know, anything from the Knights of the Round Table song, which is fantastic. Good God, yep. there's so much good stuff on here.
I know. What was the, for some reason, I love the song Finland. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But I find myself humming it randomly. Just...
It, what's so funny is it's so slow and miserable sounding also. It's not yeah. as bad as, oh my God, which is the other one? Oh, where is it? Now my brain is completely shut down. Which one is it?
That's well, there's so... Eric the Half a Bee, which is...
I think I'm thinking of a song from a different album. But Finland, I think, is the slowest one on here. But I still, yeah, it's so like... Just the little twinkling strings and stuff. Yeah, yep. it's a beautiful. what do you have a particular, like, I mean, is the penis song, because it's the first one you memorize, a favorite? Or do you have a particular favorite on here?
Yeah, I have. No, I, do you know what? I was going to say, for some reason, my favorite... Oh, well, I also, let me tell you, I did memorize that. I have the Lumberjack song memorized as well.
Good. As you should.
But I think for the absurdity, I always love the Finland song because it just grab it, like that one or Eric Haffaby. Like it mm-hmm. was just there. It's hard to have a favorite when there's so many. And I'm looking at my notes because I had to write them down because I was like, because I don't have the album in front of me right now.
Sure. Yeah. No, but I was just
pulling up Christmas in Heaven. Like, come on.
That is one of those songs that I think absolutely informed my absolute love for terrible American accents by English people.
Oh, totally.
That is because there's this weird misunderstanding over here where people seem to think all English people can do good American accents. No.
No.
Australians, most of the time, yes. Because they have the same flat vowels that we do. Mm-hmm. But the English cannot get their head around the hard R. They try and do like a North Country accent and then flatten it out. And then every American's a weird Texan. And it's funny. It's hilarious to me. Holy shit. You know what? I will say also, in terms of like super satirical songs on here, and one that still kind of resonates is the Henry Kissinger song. Because, you know, he's always been an asshole. And why not make a song about it? Nicer Legs Than Hitler and Bigger Tits Than Cher is way too catchy.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. And it starts with, I mean, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, which is a contentious song, but I love it. I love it.
I was just going to say, and maybe that would be my, because I do love that song. Mm-hmm. I would sing that one song all the time. That could be a top, like, top one or two, like, top favorite. When I saw Spamalot
on Broadway. Oh, you've seen it. I've never seen that.
So I went, well, I didn't see it on Broadway. I saw it the Chicago Broadway. So I saw two different versions of it, which was great. And they have that song in there. And I had an umbrella that had, you know, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. It. And it's just, that's another ridiculously great song.
Mm-hmm. So in Spamalot, you're going to have to educate me a bit. They've got songs from all over the Python pantheon,
yeah, and right. I feel like they have a version of the Finland, if I remember correctly, they really? Have a version of the Finland song in there, so maybe that's why I like it. It's in the beginning. I want to say it's... So here's the thing. I saw two versions. The first version that I saw, I absolutely loved, but then when I saw it again, they cut out half the songs that just didn't make it. There was a song... Okay. That the actress who she was the lead, she played a variety of different characters, but at one point she played the cow that got hurtled over, but she had she had this gorgeous solo about it dressed as a cow. And it was this gorgeous tight fitting dress with udders. And the song was, in my opinion, from what I remember, was great. It was gorgeous. And when I saw it again, I was like, oh, I'm so excited for this part. And they cut it.
Oh, come on now. That's so not fair.
Yeah.
Also, Finland, I wasn't sure. I had to look it up very quickly. I thought that is one of those that is made for, was made for one of their other albums. So it's not from a show, not from a movie. I thought. So
that's
just
what
composed.
I remember, because yeah. I remember it not being in any of the movies, and then obviously not being in Flying Circus.
Right. My God. And it's so, there's something about their records. People get, they disagree with me on this, but I like their records more than the show. I love the show. But the records I like better.
And that's fine. And I'm both. Mm-hmm. My husband doesn't understand my love for Flying Circus.
Really?
But he does love, he loves some of the movies. So he's like, I get that. He just is like, the show gets a little too obscure sometimes for him.
That's funny.
Which I get. But I do kind of agree sometimes with the albums being, it's just because it's everything is there and it's the mm-hmm. best of, as opposed
Absolutely.
To, or sometimes I would watch Flying Circus and I'm like, what are they like?
I know.
Where are we going with this?
I know. And part of that, I mean, I know that sometimes there was definitely an element of, let's see how awkward we can get. Let's see how uncomfortable we can make you. There's always a little bit of that, but it's also not as tight. And then when you pull them in and they recreate a sketch for an album, they do so much beautiful sound design.
Yes.
I'm going to be re-interviewing a guy named Andre Jackman, who produced almost every Python album.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I think we're going to be doing album by album very soon. And I love talking with him about, hey, how did you improve what was already considered like a perfect sketch? Like, it's that's what's interesting to me, is fleshing that out, making it sound better. I don't know how much he's involved with the songs, but I'm gonna have to ask him about it. Oh, there's also, speaking of penises, let's just go back to the penis songs. The Medical Love song is disgusting.
Even
if you don't know the specifics of what they're talking about, you're just like, well, I know what a pustule is, so good God. What are your thoughts on that upsetting song?
I think that one might have been something that I always passed over.
Fair.
Because it was a little too graphic, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But like anything, say it in a British accent, it does make you laugh, no matter.
That's it, right? That's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
That's such a huge part. At what point did your parents know that you were then listening to / watching / getting a hold of Python material?
Probably in high school. And then when I can't remember, it was the end of high school or beginning of college when my mom had bought me, I asked for Christmas episodes of Flying Circus. So I got like the box, I got the set of it. So she
amazing.
Knew. And it's also one of those things where she knew that it was, boy, I think she had a harder time with me watching Rocky Horror Picture Show than she did Monty Python for a while. Cause mm-hmm. I think she didn't, she's always one of those people, like if she's seen it and she's heard it before, she knows what to expect. And so
sure.
what I'm getting. And so when she saw Rocky Horror, she's like, what is this? And I was like, wait, it's fine. It's okay.
Oh.
I don't think my dad, because my dad had passed when I was in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he really knew. And I don't think I had been introduced to Monty Python too much, other than like if he was watching it and then I would come in and then he'd be like, okay, you go out of the room for certain parts and
okay.
You know.
Yeah.
So there was always filtering of what was acceptable mm-hmm. for you to watch and what was like, okay, this is, you know, especially with Flying Circus and like the ridiculous and unnecessary amount of nudity.
Uh-huh.
Which some people might fight me on it, saying that there is never an unnecessary amount, but there was, a lot of it was unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
You could have probably, yeah, way too many breasts.
It's so funny. Yeah, there are a lot of breasts. I think that's maybe one of the things that a lot of young nerd boys from the 70s won't admit was the reason they really liked Monty Python.
They hands down did. And then as a female, I kind of was like, okay, guys, like I...
And I mean,
sure.
Come on. This is a bunch of dudes in the 70s making a TV show. Of course, that's right. You know, so if it's like excessive, it's excessive.
It's excessive.
I laugh. Don't get me wrong. I find nudity very funny.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Then you have to then wonder.
Ashamed of.
Right. But then it's like, but why is it like, you know, why are these dashing you know, almost 30 somethings throwing all these boobs in there in the first place.
Yeah, and then like running off cliffs and doing like ridiculous things or going into the ocean. You're just like, okay, I don't understand this part.
Uh-huh.
I'm clearly not on drugs.
Yeah, that's always one of those things you wonder about, is what, how many drugs and to what degree.
Yeah.
I'm looking through, what else do we have? My God, there's just so much good stuff on here. This is such a, it is essentially a best of. But also stuff, I think if you weren't buying the Python albums, you didn't know a lot of these. So they would have felt just completely out of nowhere.
Right.
You know what? What are your thoughts on the Oliver Cromwell song? I have a lot of thoughts on the Oliver Cromwell song.
Oh, God. Do you know what? I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Here's the thing. So my mom is an obsessive semi-historian of English history. And when I say semi-historian, she's read every book you can. She doesn't write down her thoughts. She just, if you ask, she's an encyclopedia.
Right.
And I think there's a part of me that was like interested in it, but I also took, for that reason, took an, was it a European? It was a European history class in college. And I was listening to this album heavily then, and Cromwell came up, very few details. And they're like, hey, for extra credit in this, write an essay about something we've discussed. And I'm like, oh. And so my essay was on Cromwell, but it was this song, beat for beat, just slightly rewritten. And I told her, and she's like, great, that's awesome. She gave me full credit. But there's something about it where I'm like, it is genuinely a useful piece of information.
It's a history. It's like almost, it's a bit of a history lesson. You're like, oh, wait, I'm actually learning something.
And I think I was just Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector of England. And then I would like put in parentheses every little bit. And it was almost word for word. And good on that teacher. For she was also cool. You would also get extra credit, by the way, if you knew anything about Canadian history, because she was Canadian. Right. And so she's like, no, if you put something Canadian in there, you get extra points. And I felt bad because at the time I was not. If I didn't know anything about Canadian content laws at the time, boy, oh, boy.
You would have
mocked up. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the Money Song. That is a brilliant short piece of work.
Yep.
Also, I mean, it's because Michael Palin is so charming. Do you have a favorite Python?
No, you know, okay, I do love Michael Palin. Mm-hmm. Eric Idle, John Cleese, like they're all, I was very fortunate. One of my good friends in college I think it was for my birthday or whatever, he was speaking, doing a Q&A. They were showing, Life of Brian and doing a Q&A at the University of Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, great, I got two tickets for us. We watched the movie on the auditorium. And then afterwards we get to do like cocktails and have this like at hors d'oeuvres with him. And I had met him and I was just like, I'm such a huge fan. And I've always loved him from like Fish Called Wanda.
Sure.
And so he's in Fierce Creatures and just like obscure movies. I've always thought he was hysterical. But I think it would be Eric Idle and John Cleese and Michael Palin. Yeah, but they're all great in their own way. But I think those three are the ones who I consistently saw throughout other films as I grew older.
That's reasonable. Is it ever easy for you to like sort of pick parts of your own? Because if I ask somebody, did Monty Python influence your humor? I think it's inevitable if you listen to it. Yes, of course they did. But then how can you can't then be like, sure, they informed my acting because every woman they played was, you know, a monstrous version of a woman. It didn't make any sense.
No,
so like, can you pinpoint what their effect on your sense of humor was at least or no?
I think it was more... Boy, it was just the dry sarcasm, I think, a lot. And I think that's more a lot of British humor as well.
Sure.
But just to be absurd. Like, almost the shock value. Like, you would say something that they wouldn't expect to come out of, like, my voice or my, like, out of me. But I just think it was... God, it's a combination of things because I grew up watching them.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also, that's a tough one because I'm trying to think of like what I, you know, me as like, as someone, as a comedian and what I do, I'm not someone that like likes to make fun of people and, or, you know, but I also believe that in comedy, everyone, you just, it's, you can't just make fun of one person. You have to make fun of everyone, including yourself.
For sure.
I don't necessarily think making fun of is the right word, but it's, you have to be able to laugh at yourself before you can have the right to say something about someone else, or like a, you know, guys dressing up as women, or and vice versa. But I just liked how they were also very genuinely real. There's something real about them. And I, even though they were, some of their stuff was just absurd. And I think that was exciting to see, is like, you're like, oh wait, you know, you don't have to be so cookie cutter. You can go broad or big or anything like that. And
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, oh no, I'm just, it's just got me thinking. I was like, huh, how did they really influence me? Other than, you know, quoting lines and
No, I mean, that's always funny. That's such a big part of it. Did you make any friends over Python, or were your friends already exposed to Python, or did you expose them? I think
the majority of my friends in college, like, we all you kind of gravitate to people who like similar things. And I think my friends in college and who are still my friends now, we all grew up and loved Monty Python. And we, at the time when Eddie Izzard was big, we had talked about before this, it's like Eddie Izzard is a comic genius.
Yeah.
And then going again, British, for me, it's that British humor. So there's something to the root of all British humor, I think, that resonates with me, that is informative and based in reality, but still making fun of themselves.
Yes.
And then being okay with who you are. It doesn't matter what, who you are. It's like dressing up and being comfortable in your own skin. And it doesn't matter, you know, who you are. It's being comfortable with who you are and being, it's okay to be who you are.
So much of comedy, and obviously British comedy at the time, but so much of comedy is always, you know, I mean, bucking the system is fun. The idea of, I'm not supposed to run around, we'll just use this as an example, but I'm not supposed to run around naked, you know, of course. And every little kid wants to feel free to do that. And then when a bunch of grown ass men are doing it on TV, and at the same time, you can feel this little, this little thing of rebellion, even if you don't realize that they're shitting on as many traditional English values as they possibly can.
Right.
Which is such a huge part of it.
Yeah.
You know, represented mostly, I think, by Graham Chapman walking around in a in a general's uniform and telling him to stop being funny. It's so silly. So silly. I love it. Yeah,
like, you said that, now I just all of a sudden the sketch where they're defending yourself with a piece of fruit, a banana. What if you're getting attacked by a banana? Like, that, I loved that. The Spanish Inquisition. It's like...
There's also something so spare about it, too. I mean, just going back to the show, even, you know, to almost go against what I was saying. But, like, I think the charm of that show is how spare it was and how cheaply made it was. It was so, you know, we have a minimal budget, but let's be as funny as we can within it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? See how far we can push the envelope before we get stopped.
Right. Have you ever done sketch yourself?
Yes. Has anyone seen it? No. Sure. I've done a couple pilots in college. We did some friends where we did a lot of sketch, kind of in that same genre where it was a world and we played different characters and, you know, kind of based in reality. And it's fun. It's just, I like sketch. Mm-hmm. I like being able to kind of improv through an idea and then have it actually be fleshed out, though, so that it's not so like obscure. Yes, but at least it's tight and it's makes sense to some people, you know, as opposed to being like, there's some improv where you're just like, where are you going with this and why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. I like the slightly more polished of sketch.
Fair. No, that's absolutely fair. I had forgotten, though. I should ask you, though, speaking of sketch, you do have a credit on Mad TV. I've never seen this sketch.
No.
How many?
Because I'm just a background artist.
Are you? Yes.
It was great. It was fabulous. Oh, my God. It was like one of my first things I had done, and I had got cast as a camper in a camp scene, and it's Stephanie Weir and plays the camp counselor, and I'm blanking on the other actress who was in it. Anyway, it's just an obscure, it's an obscure scene about girls going camping, and it was fun.
That's great. Have you done a lot of extra work? People know why I'm asking at home, but have you done a lot of extra work? Or is that it?
Oh yeah, of course.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have a podcast about extra work. We're going to have to talk really? Later. Yes, I do. Oh. It's my favorite thing to do.
Oh my God. Outside of this. Well, you have to start somewhere. So
Some people don't think you should. There are people who have got, friends who, like, one of my closest friends, now he lucked out. Don't get me wrong. He got one extra gig and then started working professionally.
A lot of people do that.
I know, but whatever. I didn't try hard enough.
I think it's, here's the thing. Would I do extra work necessarily now? No.
Sure.
But in the beginning, yeah, why not? You got to kind of learn how to be on set again. And, it's a fun experience. It's also... It's not fun after a while. You're like, oh, God.
The stories I have heard on that show in only 20 episodes, I was like, holy crap, I guess I was doing fine based on some of the shit that's happened to people. Oh, boy. I know.
It's an interesting world. There's the world of extras. There's a world of laughers.
Yes.
That's a very, very interesting world to witness. And... talking about, yeah, you've got a podcast. I love the Ricky Gervais show extras. I laugh because a lot of it's true.
I know. All right, well, maybe we're going to have to talk about that separately. I'm not going to make you commit to it right now. Although, you know, I do want to bring up, I don't normally just go through somebody's IMDb, but here's the thing.
Oh, that's fine. Go for it.
My favorite credit on here is just because it's adorable that were both your brother and you on Camp Candy. Did he have you both do voices on it? Oh, it's so cute. That's the cutest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, we both did voices. My brother was fortunate enough to get a different character. I think in the second season, they created a character for him. Mm-hmm. I just, in the second season, replaced the actress who played Vanessa. So I love it when people are like, oh, you were Vanessa. I was like, oh, no. I give credit to the actress who actually did the voice for Vanessa. I don't know what it was that happened in second season. I was oblivious. I don't know. Unfortunately, I replaced her for like 2 or 3 episodes. And I feel I had fun. I didn't know until much later.
Sure, of course. I mean, how would you? You're a little kid. I mean, that's adorable. That is the freaking sweetest thing in the world. I love that.
It was fun.
Oh my God. I can't imagine also, like, whenever I hear about kids doing voiceover work, it feels like it's got to be more confusing to do that than any, because why am I talking into this microphone? Did you quite get it? Did you know why? Did you quite understand it?
You know what? I actually think I did, because my dad was doing a radio show at the time. So I would watch him do a radio show, and I had done a couple little bits with him there where I would played the kid in, you know, a segment or something like that. Or I was reading something, or so I remember I did a couple things like that. So I kind of understand the concept. And I remember I had to audition. I remember going for Vanessa. I remember my dad giving me the script. Mm-hmm. And we were in my room, and he was sitting with me, and he's like, okay, I want you to read the lines with me. And I read the lines, and I remember we had an argument about this. I had done the character with a Valley Girl voice, and that's who Vanessa was. And my dad said, no, I don't want you to do it with the Valley Girl voice. I want you to just read it normally. And I was like, okay, yes, but do you understand? So then I had an argument with my dad about how to do it. And so I had gone in to record, and I had done it. I read it the way that my dad had said, okay, just be yourself and, you know, go from there. And then I remember the casting director, she says, great, can you do it with a Valley Girl voice?
Of course.
Looking at my dad going, huh. And he was like, oh, God. But I think what he was trying to do was have me be me and get comfortable. And then if you can be comfortable who you are, then he knew that I probably could do the voice or do that. But he just wanted to make sure. I think he was trying to just get me to know the lines, and I wasn't thinking of it that way.
Yeah. That's so funny. I mean, you know, as somebody myself who's like, you know, I grew up imitating, sorry, give me one second. I apologize. I just want to just make sure everything's okay in the next room. Just give me uno.
No, go for it.
I have one hell of an imagination. I heard something that did not even happen. Okay, that's fun. Go.
Just making sure.
Oh my God. I had a question for you. What was it? Son of a
gun.
Oh, that's what it was. As somebody who myself has done a lot of, not professional, but not a lot of voice work and a lot of impressions, one thing you have to get over when you're young is the impression is not the act. Acting itself, you know what I mean? You have to learn to act within that because sometimes you kind of rely on somebody else's interpretation. You know what I mean? If you've ever had to, because sometimes I've had to play like Wallace Shawn on stage and they're like, do the impression. And I do it, but if you're not acting within it, it just sounds like a hollow voice. Yeah. So it makes sense to teach a kid that.
Yeah.
Speaking of impressions though, did you ever, when you sing along with the Python stuff, are you singing full accent everything?
Oh yeah.
It's part of it, right?
It's horrible. It's yes. I have to be careful because every kid and every, you know, I could do an English accent and you're like, okay, well, yeah, everyone can. But no, you really can't. But yeah, no, full accent and everything when I sing.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. Okay. I get it. I know how it goes. I lived across from some English kids in Germany and I remember being like, I can do an English accent too. Do you want to hear? And they'd be like, yeah, sure. And I'd do it. And then that's terrible. I'm like, no, it's not. It's good. Like, no, it's not. It doesn't sound anything like us. I'm like, it's good. Shut up. You know, so I know how that goes. But you have to. Everything I sing along with, though, I think I do the voice of the person.
I think so, too. I think that's just how you remember. It sometimes helps you how you remember the song itself, too, is mm-hmm. by the way that it's sung.
Isn't it? I mean, which kind of, I think, then blows me away about when professional musicians actually cover a song and sound nothing like it. I'm like, how do you do that? I can't hear it any other way in my head.
Yeah. I know. That's how everyone's brain works differently and processes music differently. So that's why I give props to musicians who can just, they have that musical ear and can hear a song, but then sing it in their own way.
Yeah. Did you, here's the thing. I asked Chris about this, but sometimes people's memories differ about this. So I'd like to know how many, if that album was in the house in vinyl, was there other stuff sitting around that you got your hands on or wanted to get your hands on comedy-wise?
Oh, gosh, comedy-wise. Do you know what? I think Chris has I don't know if he has a better knowledge. I'm trying to think what was in the house that we, a lot of Abbott and Costello stuff.
Awesome.
That's more comic. That's just the straight up comedy.
Yeah.
So Abbott and Costello was definitely in the house, and I'm pretty sure it was on vinyl too.
Awesome.
That was another thing I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anything else that. I didn't even listen to what my brother had said, but
here's the thing is I've also forgotten, which is a bonus though, because the thing is sometimes you'll ask somebody like, we didn't grow up with it. He didn't at any point bring up Monty Python things. That didn't come up. So
I think he was still a little too young because he was younger than me. I am the older sister. So I think I was the one who loved Monty Python. I don't think it was so much my brother's. It was a generational thing, but mm-hmm. I also think he just didn't get into it. And because I think I was a little bit older and then maybe closer to high school, I was able to watch it. And then therefore my mom definitely knew my brother was like, no, you're not, this is not for you. And there was no hope for me because I had already seen it.
Yeah. Of course. So, all right. So it didn't even register with him. That's interesting.
Yeah. I love that the Abbott registered with him. Huh. But I definitely, so it goes to show you that it wasn't just like my parents weren't just watching it on the TV all the time. And,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think with him it registered so much, but I think that was definitely more my thing. And then other albums, Abbott and Costello for sure, awesome. Which I grew up loving and watching, and you know, and just like the Steve Martin and all of their albums and Eddie Murphy and but I don't think I appreciate it or really got to listen to any of that stuff until you know, college.
Yeah, that makes sense. We also, it had to come up, but at some point, the week after I spoke with your brother, because we were both like, I was like, what? Was your dad on any records? And he's on some stuff, but he's like, were the Schmengi brothers? And the next week we talk about Comic Relief, and Comic Relief released a record.
Oh yeah.
And there you go.
Schmengi brothers. Comic Relief. Definitely. Cause I know because I'm actually picturing the album now.
Yes.
That it came in. We had that.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have listened to it. My memory. Boy, you forget half the stuff that you listened to as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. They did the Cabbage Rolls and Coffee Polka. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit, is it funny.
Lovely.
What's funny is, and also my guest that week, Jimmy Pardo, we both agreed there are about 3 funny bits on this whole fucking special. It's so terrible. But that one is a standout because it's just, it's when you're talking about Python, it is pure comedic abandon. It's yeah. all it is. It's just, let's do a crazy accent for a few minutes and just go with it. And usually wear a crazy costume, but come on. It's, yeah, the rest of it's shit. It's a terrible album.
Yeah.
It's garbage. Although, I will say, and I brought this up at several points during it, Robin Williams is just trying too hard. And I love Robin Williams, but he's trying right. too hard. And a couple times when he does what can only be described as a black person voice, Whoopi Goldberg calls him out on it, but with a big old smile on her face. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
God.
Because she uses a specific word for black folks that he would not be allowed to use. And it's very funny. Her oh, just wow. calling him yeah. out.
I honestly do not remember that album. I need to.
It's, I mean, I don't know that it's worth a revisit. It might be worth a revisit with a specific eye to a couple specific sketches, and then right. you'll be like, this was great. Yeah. And then the rest of it you can ignore.
Got it.
Boy, oh boy. yeah, so okay, so we got Abbott and Costello, we got Python, we got, you even, like you said, Steve Martin, yeah. Eddie Murphy, that stuff was in there. So were your, because it doesn't always.
That was oh, another, yeah. like, yeah, sure. of course.
So were they up on it? They were just buying the big comedy hits of the time.
My dad loved being up on all of that, and you know, when then eventually like Warehouse Music and all the record shops opened up, and you know, we grew in a small town, and then when we came to LA, he would just go and he would buy music and comedy albums and just anything and everything, and classics and new stuff, and he was always learning and always trying to keep up with the times and mm-hmm. I think that's how it kind of bled over into to Chris and I.
Yeah. Do you think it was, well, nothing's inevitable. Was it inevitable? Does it feel like that you would have been involved in comedy in some way? Because it's just so there all the time.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think so. Always I like to make people laugh. So I think that's always mm-hmm. something that as a kid, and I think it's just something that I prefer comedy over dramas and stuff like that. I like the, our real world is so heavy already, and it's yes. always been heavy, and it's something that I think we need to leave reality to reality and mm-hmm. you know, focus on the issues in reality, and then you can escape to something that is fun and lighthearted and makes you kind of escape for, you know, 60 minutes to an hour and a half to 2 hours, and then you yeah. go back and you're like, okay, it's, you know, you kind of have to, it's a balancing act. You don't want to completely ignore, you know, it's escape everything into films, but you don't want to shut off what's going on in the real world,
right? And if you want pure escape, this album, to I swear to God, like, I need to listen to it again today. Like, it's yeah. just pure escape. It is all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, now,
kind of like, okay, and then you and yeah, like you said, there's some on there where you're like, okay, I don't need to
sure.
listen to that again.
Skip.
But then you just are like, I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to go listen. Mm-hmm. I'll listen to it. I listened to it before a couple of days ago. I was like, oh, and my husband's like, what are we listening to? I was like,
oh my goodness. He needs to be schooled. That is not, you got to learn. You got to learn this record. Come on. Come on.
In his defense, I was listening to the Finland song. So
he well.
Like, wait a second. What is this?
That does not stand out. Yes, to be fair, if you heard that apropos of nothing, you had no idea what was going on, I guess that would throw you a little bit. What is this a song about? But, and it's just the way Finland. Oh my God. It's
Finland,
the voice.
Finland, Finland.
Mumbles through half of it and it gets too loud. It's just the mixing. These are by the way, I feel like I'm gonna when I talk to the producer, I'm just gonna be like, I'm so sorry. Like, it just, it's real funny when it gets loud there, huh? And then he'll have to be like, yeah, okay, sure. Do you want to talk about the details, or you want to say dumb shit like that? I'm so afraid it's gonna be the most just impotent interview ever. I like decomposing composers. That's a really good one.
Oh, right.
It's so dark.
What about that one?
Uh-huh. Just the very idea that they're all dead and everybody's going to die and saying it in a funny way. I don't know how. Again, Eric Idle again. Not Eric Idle. Sorry, Michael Palin again. Michael I don't Palin. Know why it's so funny. I don't know why it's so funny. It's just his acting. I think there's, if you, to me, he's the most, he feels like the best actor of them all to me. I love them all, but I feel he's the most, he somehow puts pathos into a song about dead composers. Yeah. And I don't know how that works.
No, he's always, look, in Fish Called Wanda, he's my favorite character. And Fierce Creatures, he's my favorite character. Like, he just, he is a scene stealer. Like, if he's on the screen, I always gravitate to watching him because he's just, he's hysterical.
I don't know why. I mean, he's also adorable. Like, he's a cute as a button. But, I mean, you know. Okay, so we've talked, I think, at length about this, and hopefully I didn't hammer you too much about all the other stuff, but I mean, you know, I had to ask you about your other influences.
Oh, of course.
Why, in two sentences, it doesn't have to be two sentences, but why briefly listen to this album if somebody's never heard of it? Maybe somebody doesn't even know Monty Python. There's a chance that that's out there, you know.
That's true. Oh, I know a lot of people that don't know Monty Python. Oh,
man, don't remind me.
I know, sorry, it just makes me feel old.
I am same here. We're both the same age, but so we both get to feel the same amount of old. It's fine. So yeah, why give this a listen?
If you just want to laugh and kind of music, laugh. That's it. It's I don't know. It's I think you want to listen to this album. If you just want to listen to something absurd, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's singable. It's nonsense.
There are songs in there that you're going to get stuck in your head, and there's songs that you're going to go, ooh, no, I'm going to skip. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see comedy writing at its finest, and also musical writing. Like, it's just, I think it's a nice, it's a fun album. It's something you don't take seriously. Don't take don't take literal. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, you know, you can't. Don't get upset about it.
And there's at least one on here that's an insult to songwriting in general, which is I've Got Two Legs, which is not, it's barely a song. I love it though.
I know, it's so good. Oh, I forgot about that one.
I know. I keep looking and I'm like, oh, fuck, right. I could talk for an hour about that one. But
yeah,
it's an insult. Is there any music behind him? There is it, right? He's just singing it.
I think he's just singing.
Yeah.
I have to listen to it again. It's just. Oh, the furry sperm is sacred. Yeah. It's things I got stuck in my head when I was younger, and I'll always kind of have that in the back of my head, and it's just, it's absurdity at its best.
It's one of those things that gets in your DNA, and I think it's unavoidable. So, I mean, I like to ask the how does it influence you? I know that there's no answer. And most of the time it's like, that's a tough question. It's like, I know. But if somebody has a way to express it that nobody else has, I'm always interested. I expect somebody to be stumped because I do think it's something that's in your DNA. It's really, really hard to like peg, like unless you've written a joke where you realize you just stole it from Python. It's like, I don't know. How do I answer that question?
Yeah. Well, I remember... I sometimes always say, like, when I was doing sketch comedy or if I was just doing any, like, scenes or anything like that, I always liked doing those short blackout scenes that made the audience kind of go, oh, that really wasn't fun. But it was hysterical to me and to the people because it was like a bad pun. I love bad puns. Mm-hmm. My friend and I, Jarrett, we did stupid stuff like that all the time. And we love to write stuff that was just absolutely silly. Mm-hmm. And it's just silliness. You just sometimes need to be silly, and there sometimes doesn't need to be an explanation for it. You just need to be silly.
I agree. This is a good time for silly. You know, again, in moderation, deal with life when it happens, but then take a fucking break for yourself. Give yourself whatever this is, 40 minutes, 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Listen to some dumb shit. Jennifer, this has been a delight.
Oh, thank you.
Why don't you tell people, this is going to come out, oh my God, I apologize, I did this last week. It's kind of going to come out in 2 or 3 weeks. So can you tell people where they can find you and if there's anything coming up where they can see you, listen to you, whatever?
Well, I would just tell people to, if they want, follow me either on Instagram or Twitter at the Real Jen Candy. Okay. And I've got a show called, I was doing a show called Couch Candy, where I was interviewing alumni of SCTV and friends of my dad's and kind of actors, you know, throughout history.
So good.
So I've been putting those out on YouTube. So if you Google Couch Candy on YouTube, then you can kind of check out the shows that I've been putting up, and I'm going to keep putting more shows out. And as of right now, I'm just kind of, you know, doing the social distancing thing and staying at home and keeping busy that way. So I'm putting out stuff that I've done in the past, but you know, just kind of as soon as things are ready to open back up again, I'll be ready to go and keep you guys posted. So I keep people posted there.
I got to say, I really respect, because there's somebody like me who doesn't have, you know, I've really got to nag people to get them on my show most of the time. You were very quick and kind about it. You're like, oh, cool. No, that's fine. Which I really appreciate. But I really respect you doing something like Couch Candy, because I think some people shy away from stuff that is not something they necessarily did, and or maybe shy away from talking to people that, you know, they have this connection to. I respect that you're doing it, because it is always a bit of oral history. And people sort of forget that, because it might just be a fun interview with somebody that you already know, but like the little bits and pieces that come out that have never come out before.
Yeah.
I don't know. That kind of stuff is important. So I think it's really cool that you're doing
it. It's a history lesson. And I always say, if someone comes out of there learning one piece of history or one piece of something new that they never knew about that actor, then I've done my job. It's just, it's supposed to be lighthearted and fun. And, slightly educational, you know. It is a part of their career, and they are part of comedy history, either via directing or writing, acting, everything. So I kind of like exploring all of that.
That's wonderful.
It's fun. It's, you know, it's challenging because everyone's so busy. People are busy. So there's so many people that you want on the show still and already wanted on the show. And they're just like, I'm working. I'm like, well, that's a good answer to this.
That's fair enough. Well, when things straighten out, I mean, now that I know the show exists, I'm absolutely going to have to. That's just that I will line up for that. That sounds remarkable fun.
Yeah, like, we'll take two. Yeah, it's a fun escape for, you know, anywhere from 45 to an hour.
That's awesome. That's so good. Thank you again for doing the show. I'm just going to tell people, go to stolendress.com. That's where all my podcasts were, including The Professional Blur, which we talked about earlier, which is about extra work. Dispatches from Fort Awesome, which is a show about news radio. And then there's Dana J's Comedy Hour, where I talk to my best friend about her own sketch comedy going back 25 plus years. So that's about it. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs, and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years. Dress Entertainment.
Hey, it's my turn. Ah!